Good evening, and welcome to the outreach program sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to obtain license status. This is the first in a series of an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for a technician class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which would be at 7 p.m., which is 2300 Zulu, each Tuesday and Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please contact us at SCARS, that's S-C-A-R-S, server, at either Echolink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614. For those who are interested in obtaining your license for the first time, please contact Mike, KD0CDQ, via email. Now, here's the email address for SCARS. That's VOIP at VOIPnet, one word, dot SouthCARS, the stick SouthCARS together, dot com, to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connected into the course. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class and session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at VOIPnet.southcars.com. Letting it drop. Before we start this evening's program, it should be mentioned that the material being covered, again, is based on the new Q&A pool that just became effective July 1st, 2014, the new pool. This means that this material should not be used for those that are planning to take the test prior to the date shown. Well, that's already passed. I should strike that sentence. It should be further mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules, and should not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at VOIPnet.southcars.com. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Okay, without further ado, my name is Mike. That's Mike India Kilo Echo. My call sign is Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec, and I am your opening moderator for this evening. At this point, let us begin. Now, we're going to have two fine instructors tonight. Our instructors will be Kathy, K6SUN, and Gordon, KY6Victor. Both happen to be in Florida, but you'll hear them nationwide, if not worldwide, definitely. So I believe the first question we're going to hand off to Kathy. And Kathy will take it away with sub-element T4. Take it, Kathy, please.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike, and welcome everyone this evening as to SouthCARS' third class of the technician course. Actually, it's about 90 degrees here in DeLand for us at the moment, but very nice indoors. And I'm going to start off with sub-element T4, amateur radio practices and station setup. It actually has two exam questions and two groups. So it covers station setup, connecting microphones, reducing unwanted emissions, power source, connecting a computer, RF grounding, connecting digital equipment, and connecting an SWR meter. So my question, I'm going to pause for just a moment and I'll give you the question, the four choices, the correct answer, and a slight explanation. So let me pause here for a moment. All right. The question reads, how might a computer be used as part of an amateur radio station? Let me read it again. How might a computer be used as part of an amateur radio station? Alpha is for logging contacts and contact information. Bravo for sending and or receiving CW. Charlie for generating and decoding digital signals and my favorite Delta. All of these choices are correct. And actually, we want to encourage you as you're listening not to memorize these alpha designators, because they will be switched around when you take that test. But my favorite answer is Delta. All of these choices are correct. So guys and gals, if you stop and think about this question, that is exactly what we are doing at the moment. Some of you may be coming to us via RF, such as a link, a repeater, or a node, but we are all being tied in by computers in some way. So with that, I'm going to see if there's any comments and any questions from either our class members or anyone listening. So if you'd like to come aboard, please come aboard. All right, hearing nothing, and that was a fairly easy question, but like I said, I always like that all of these choices are correct. And actually, that was my first question, Gordon. So I'm going to throw it over to you for the next one. I believe it's a Tango 4 Alpha 04, KY6V.
Hey, thanks, Kathy. Good evening, everybody. Gordon here, KY6V, Central Florida. Beautiful weather today. We had a little rain, but it didn't last very long. Made the grass smile, and that was a happy thing, I guess. I'm going to move you on into T4 Alpha 04. Tango 4 Alpha 04. And that question reads, where must a filter be installed to reduce harmonic emissions from the station? And the answers that they propose for you is A as an alpha, between the transmitter and the antenna. And I will say to you that that is the correct answer of the group. B was between the receiver and the transmitter, and that's false. C at the station power supply, which is again false. And D at the microphone, which is a no-no. So the answer to this question, where must a filter be installed to reduce harmonic emissions from your station, is A, between the transmitter and the antenna. So I would say to you, please remember here that any stage in a transmitter can produce harmonics. This being the case, one would want to place the filter at the output of the transmitter and the feed line to the antenna for maximum filtering. Stop and think about that. I think that'll make sense. Any questions on that one, please? Over. All right, Ms. Kathy, Alpha 05 is yours.
All right, thank you so much, Gordon. And you know, they're rather quiet this evening, both our class members and those listening, but that's fine. My question is a Tango 4 Alpha 05. It reads, where should an inline SWR meter be connected to monitor the standing wave ratio of the station antenna system? And once again, we have Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, and Delta. Alpha reads in series with the feed line between the transmitter and the antenna, and I will tell you, Alpha is the correct answer. Bravo in series with the station ground is false. Charlie in parallel with push-to-talk line and the antenna is false. And D in series with the power supply cable as close as possible to the radio is false. So the question read, where should an inline SWR meter be connected to monitor the standing wave ratio of the station antenna system? And the correct answer is in series with the feed line between the transmitter and the antenna. Now, what one is trying to determine here is what standing wave ratio your system is seeing. The proper spot to place this device is either between your transmitter and antenna feed line, or between your antenna feed line and the antenna itself. So do we have any questions? If so, please come aboard. Well, Mr. Gordon, they're rather quiet this evening, so hopefully these questions are easy for them. So I'll throw it over to you for the next one, which is Alpha 07.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. Well, you know, guys and gals, that last question that Kathy posed was articulated absolutely correctly. But there's a lot to learn on that. And as you get in playing and building antennas and trying to read SWR, there's some things in addition that have not been mentioned that you're going to want to learn. So that'll all come in good time, I suspect. All right, we're going to move on to Tango 4 Alpha 07, T4A07. That question reads, how is a computer's sound card used when conducting digital communication using a computer? I'll read that again. How is a computer's sound card used when conducting digital communication using a computer? The four questions or four answer possible answers that they give you is A, the sound card communicates between the computer's CPU and the video display, and that is false. Disregard that one. B, the sound card records the audio frequency for video display. That is also false, so please disregard. C, as in Charlie, the sound card provides audio to the microphone input and converts received audio to digital form. That is the correct answer for this particular question. Again, don't memorize the alpha designators because they will be changed by the VECs. You know, the question and answer will be identical to what you have in front of you. But they'll play with those alpha designators to make sure you didn't memorize them by the alphas. And then in D, it says all of these choices are correct. So the proper answer in this question was C, as in Charlie. Now, said slightly differently, the sound card converts your analog microphone to digital format. It also converts the incoming audio from the station you are talking with from digital to analog to allow you to receive the speaker or audio normally. So do we have any questions on that one, please? Over.
Does a sound card, like what it said in the sentence, it said that the sound card, if you don't have a sound card in your computer, does that mean you can't hear or, I don't know, but talk to the next person?
Yes, Lyman, that's correct. You need a sound card in the computer. It does a very important maneuver, and that is it takes our normal voice, which we call an analog voice pattern, when you're speaking and I'm speaking, and it converts it, the sound card itself converts it to a digital format, sends it out through the internet to the station that you're talking to, and then reconverts it from digital to analog so that station can understand what you're saying. Conversely, in the opposite route, that signal coming from the station that you're talking to is digital. Your sound card converts it to analog, amplifies it, and runs it to your speaker so that you can understand what he's saying. So in order to use what we call VOIP, that's Voice Over Internet Protocol, that's what we're using here tonight with you. You need a sound card to make this transfer. And you have an apparatus within your iPhone that's doing that for you. Over.
Yeah, you really explained that, and I really get that because you helped explain that to me. Thank you.
And Lyman, also the nice thing about a sound card, it's built in your computer. You don't have to buy anything separate. Like an SWR, you may have to get an extra box for that. But this is right in your computer, and it's really neat when you're doing digital, because it actually, as Gordon was telling you, it actually makes it visible on the screen. Also with the digital, you can use the keyboard on your computer, and it goes into your computer and it comes out on the other person's computer showing the same thing that you're typing on your computer keyboard. They are seeing it. It goes right through the computer. and that goes through the sound card. And you can adjust, you can make adjustments to the sound card, you know, for volume, and that's quite interesting to do. So sound card is nice because it's free. It's part of your computer. Okay, I think we're going over to Kathy now, unless you have anything more on that, Lyman, or anyone else that's listening in. Please come in now if you have something more to say on that.
All right, thank you so much, Mike, and nice question, Lyman, and great answer, Gordon. My next question is Tangle 4 Alpha 10, and it reads, what is the source of a high-pitched whine that varies with engine speed in a mobile transceiver's receive audio? Your choices are Alpha, the ignition system, which I'll tell you is false. Bravo, which is the alternator, is actually the correct answer. Charlie, the electric fuel pump, again false, and Delta anti-lock braking system controllers. So once again, it reads, what is the source of a high-pitched whine that varies with engine speed in a mobile transceiver's receive audio? And the right answer is the alternator. And some quick tips here. Make sure your radio is properly grounded to the car frame. Make sure you run your DC line directly to the battery and not use the fuse block. And make sure that you have an inline fuse at the battery. So if you want to look for something in that question that gives you a clue to the answer, you know, I would think of engine and alternator. I remember my alternators when they went, the car wouldn't run. So are there any comments or any questions out there? If so, please come aboard.
RMO with a quick comment.
Go right ahead with your comment, please.
Another source of a high-pitched whine in your car is conceivably it could be your wife. Back to the net.
Well, that was a good one. But what I was going to say is even though the cars are so advanced today, last year one of my friends bought a truck. I won't tell you the brand. And when he got that thing home and he put his radio in it, he had a terrible whine coming from the engine. And it took quite a bit of work for him to get that to go away. So it's still something, even though it seems like an old thing, it's still something that can happen with some cars because of the way they're wiring and the boards and all the computerization that's in these cars. So it's not a thing of the past. It's still with us today. Okay, I think we're jumping over to Gordon now.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Gary. Gary, I bet you got swatted by Stephanie on that last one. Stephanie, tell them, you know, it can also be a universal joint in the drive shaft that's starting to go. And we'll leave it at that. Great tips, Kathy, on that last one. All right, we're moving on to Tango 4 Alpha 12. T4A12, and it reads, what could be happening if another operator reports a variable high-pitched whine on the audio from your mobile transmitter? Sort of goes along with the last question, doesn't it? A, your microphone is picking up noise from an open window. B, you have the volume on your receiver set too high. C, you need to adjust your squelch control. All a bunch of baloney. The answer is D. Noise on the vehicle's electrical system is being transmitted along with your speech audio. Now, we pretty well covered this in the last question. You know, simply use good installation techniques. And I would say to you, Mike, I've had radio equipment in cars for many, many years. Ham radio equipment. And in some of the older cars where the grounding was not as good as maybe some of the newer cars, alternator whine was always a problem. And there's fixes for that too. If you can find where the grounding needs to be worked on, or there are some pretty nifty filters that can be installed right at the battery terminals, and then power your radios from that, and that alternator noise in most cases is absolutely gone. Any questions on this, please? KY6V, over.
Juliet Lima.
Now, Juliet Lima is a little short for UJL, but I bet you that's Jim. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. I really have enjoyed the last two extra comments. Someone tried to get in there just before that last question. I wanted to let you know in case you didn't know.
Thanks, Jim. No, I didn't hear that. Was there somebody else that wanted to get in on this parley, please?
CE3MEW with a comment.
Mr. Peterborough. Good evening, Bill. Nice to have you with us. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Gordon. That wasn't me, by the way. I was going to comment on this particular one. As you're probably aware, or many people probably know by now, our modern vehicles today, even my 1998 Buick out there, has got a considerable amount of digital computer circuitry on there that controls a whole great bunch of the operation of the car. And the car is polluted with it from one end to the other. Most of the time, it's pretty good. Not a problem. But we have run into problems up here in a couple of times, and in trucks as well, even in a very high $125,000 tractors for pulling highway trailers, where the computer circuitry was interfering with the radio, and in turn, the radio was interfering with the computer circuitry. And in actual some cases, shutting the truck right down. So calls for warranty, calls for service, and so on and so forth did not come out very positive until the amateur community had to take the matter under their own advisement and come up with the filters and various devices they could to try and isolate one thing from another. And one of the things we found out sometimes in cars is that lots of parts of the cars are made of plastic now. They're not made of metal no more. So that can be a bit of a problem as well sometimes for bonding and grounding and isolation of sections from one to the other. Some of that material is addressed in the latest amateur radio handbook, by the way. I'm proud to say I got one of the ones from the anniversary with my call sign and name on the front of the book with in gold. And ooh, I'm just bragging. Ignore me. V3MEW, back to net.
Hey, some great points. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate that. And you're very, very correct. These plastic cars just don't do a number on a lot of things, you know. Don't supply a ground plane for your antenna. Don't supply a ground for your radio. Find a way to get to the frame, guys and gals, and ground your radio directly to the frame. That's number one. And Bill, I would say that, you know, our friend George down there in Orange City, LCB, had two T-Birds, and he put an ICOM 7000 in the T-Bird, and every time he fired that up, the engine stopped, Bill. Over.
Well, it got so bad up here with one of my friends who I actually tutored and got him into amateur radio. And he's a highway tractor-trailer driver, hauls from here down to Texas and back. And it got so bad with him that the company refused to replace any of the computer chips in the truck. They told him to get the radios out of his truck and that the truck was not designed for that, even though everybody knows you put CB radios in the truck, some of them are linears. But anyway, yeah, to keep his truck on the road, he had to take all the radios out, no more. He couldn't even have his APRS radio in there running. And so what he's done here about 3 weeks ago, got rid of the truck, bought a brand new one, different brand, different model, and he went to a lot of trouble to make sure that this was not going to be a problem. So now he's back on the road, new truck, and radios are installed, everything's working tickety-boo, so we can track him and follow him and chat with him. Back to you, V3MEW.
That's a great story. Tickety-boo. I like that, too. Hey, thanks, Bill. All right, Kathy, I'm going to throw it over to you, Bravo 02, I believe. Over.
All right, thank you, Gordon. And all I have to do is make a comment about computers in at least my vehicle, in that amber light that I never see going away. If I didn't have the computers in there, maybe I wouldn't see that. But let me continue on. Tangle 4, Bravo. Operating controls, tuning, use of filters, squelch function, AGC, repeater offset, and memory channels. And my question is, Tangle 4, Bravo 02. And it reads, which of the following can be used to enter the operating frequency on a modern transceiver? An alpha, which is actually the correct answer, states the keypad or the VFO. And I think that means variable frequency oscillator knob. Bravo is the CTCSS or the DTMF encoder. Charlie, the automatic frequency control. And D, all of these choices are correct, which normally is my favorite. But B, C, and D are the wrong choices. And remember, as you're going through these questions, if there's something in the question that gives you a clue for the answer, you know, just relate to it. But don't memorize the alpha designator, as Gordon and I and all of our instructors keep telling you. So each transceiver out there these days seems to have a different way to do things. Save yourself a lot of time and frustration by reviewing the operation manual before you get started. So at this point, before I turn over to Gordon for the next question, are there any comments or any questions?
Well, not on this question, but the last question you guys asked, you guys were talking about Bill was saying about his car. Can you actually put your ham radios in your actual car?
P3MEW here.
Yes, go ahead. You answered that, Bill, because you presented the question. That's a good question that you have there, Lyman. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay, this is V3MEW. Maybe Lyman wasn't aware that we put our amateur radio gear in the car. I started out putting CB, Citizens Band equipment in my car long before I got my amateur ticket, and I had one in the truck, too, all the time. But once I moved up to get my ham license, then the CB went out the window. Well, not literally, but I mean, it was no longer in the truck. And then it was amateur radio equipment went in the truck and in the car. So, right there in front of the seat, fastened to the floor, I have an ICOM 2820 dual band radio with about 60 watts output. I have a mag mount antenna, a dual band antenna on the roof. And my radio is a D-Star radio, so that's another advantage for communications. And I use it frequently. I monitor all the time. See, one of the things is I'm the sponsor for the local repeater up here. If you look up a VE3PBO, you will see that it's the Peterborough Amateur Radio Club repeater. And my name is on that call sign at Industry Canada. So if something goes wrong, I'm the guy that they're going to come talking to. And we've been through this before, of course. So I monitor the radio on a fairly regular basis. And to try and keep abreast of what may or may not be happening that's good or bad. So I can take appropriate steps and be knowledgeable about what's going on that is on there. But yeah, we definitely, some people run their handhelds in the car. And they get unfair expectations of what you can do with a handheld radio that's putting out a 2 or 3 watts. They expect they could talk to the world, and that's not necessarily so. Once we talk them into putting an external antenna on the car and connect it to the handheld and get a microphone to plug into the radio, then all things work a lot better after that. Up here we have the distracted driving law, in effect, as many of the states do. And if the police see you holding a handheld up to your mouth while you're driving down the street, they're not going to be too happy with you. So back to you, Lyman, VE3MEW.
Well, thank you for that. And I found out, because you guys told me, that you can't, I don't think you can't do that with plastic cars because they don't have, I don't know, it's plastic. And that frequencies and that stuff don't go well, plastic.
Oh, young fella, I'm telling you, we have our ways. You take a problem and you think about it long enough, eventually you come up with a solution. We have our ways, sir, and it works. Back to Ned.
All right, I'll pick it up here. Let me see if I've got it. Thanks, Bill. And thank you, Lyman. Yeah, what Bill was just saying to you, Lyman, is that we know how to make a plastic car radiate. So that's not really a big problem. All right, we're going to move on to Tango 4 Bravo 03, T4B03. That question reads, what is the purpose of the squelch control on a transceiver? Let me reread that. What is the purpose of the squelch control on a transceiver. They give you five answers here. A, to set the highest level of volume desired. That's totally false. B, to set the transmitter power level. That is also totally false. C, to adjust the automatic gain control. No relevance here at all. That's false. And D, to mute the receiver output noise when no signal is being received. So the proper answer to the question, what is the purpose of the squelch control on a transceiver, is to mute the receiver output noise when no signal is being received. And I'll simply say the only thing that can be said here is thank you very much for squelch controls, or all of us would be listening to noise all the time. And there's always residual noise out there. So this circuit quiets it down until it hears a signal. Any questions on this, please?
Yes, and something to watch the linemen and all the new hams when you get your first handheld radio. They normally put the squelch control and the volume control on the same stem. You know, say what happens, sometimes when you're adjusting the volume, you move the squelch and get all this noise coming in over the radio, and for a second you can't think, where's that noise from? It actually happened because when we turned the volume, sometimes inadvertently we turned the squelch at the same time. So be very cautious when you change the volume on your handheld radios, that the squelch control is usually on the same post. That's just something to remember. Okay, let's go on with this. Any more questions about the question that Gordon just covered?
My grandfather, he gave me a Grundig 750. That's the radio he gave me. And I always used the squelch control because it would all be a or all that different noises, and I would always use the squelch control to help me.
A3MEW.
Go right ahead, Bill.
Hey, here's a comment for you, Gord. Do you ever notice, and we do this up here frequently because we have a little problem on the repeater right now, somebody will be talking, and they may have a low-powered station, and they're not coming through the repeater very good. There's a lot of background noise coming in with them, and it's just terrible. So we push the Monty button, which means you're no longer listening to the output of the repeater. You're listening to the input. And quite frequently, many of the times, you can hear the people loud and clear on direct from wherever they're at, when you can't get them properly through the repeater. But the minute they stop talking, there's the background noise. The squelch does not work when you've got the Monty button engaged, or what Monty is short for monitor. You got the Monty button engaged, you're listening to the direct input to the repeater, not the output, and the squelch does not work. I just always thought that was kind of interesting, Gord.
Interesting comment, Bill. I'll have to check that. I'm not sure that I understand why that should be. You know, the way the squelch circuit works, I've never noticed that. But yes, I certainly have noticed that there are many times, depending on your location and proximity to the transmitting station, that you can hear them direct better than the repeater is picking them up. I'll play with that, Bill. That's an interesting thought, because I don't think I've ever run across the squelch not working on reverse over.
Well, sir, all I can tell you is that the way it works on all the radios up here, in my possession. So. Now, mind you, if you're on a direct frequency, if you're on, say, 146.52 or 55 or whatever, the squelch works perfectly normal because you're not, for some reason, and it's fine. But if you were talking through our Peterborough repeater, and I'm supposed to be hearing you at 146.625, and you're not coming in very well, and I push the Monty button, which changes my receiver to hear on 146.025, and you're much louder and clear and full scale and all that good stuff. The minute you stop talking, there's that background noise, that shushin noise that the squelch would normally take out, but it doesn't do it on that particular thing there. So anyway, you can play with it and see what you think. It'd be interesting to hear your comments. V3MEW.
Yeah, interesting, Rico. Thanks, Bill, for that. Okay, Kathy, I think you're up next. I may have lost track here, but I think you're coming up on Bravo 04. Is that correct? Over.
I think it's 5.
This is CDQ to SUN. Kathy, did you pick up on that? Over.
Okay, since she's sitting right next to me here. All right, she's lost her connection, guys and gals. I'll pick up her next one. Let me just double check on this, Mike. I don't know where he got 05. She says she's back also. I'm showing Tango 4, Bravo 04. Let's get confirmation. Kathy, are you ready? Over.
This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Are you hearing me, Gordon?
That pretty voice is loud and clear. Over.
All right. All of a sudden, I lost that favorite proxy I had, and I wasn't hearing anything. So actually, probably my recording, not sure if it's still going, but hopefully. I just wanted to make a comment to Lyman. You know, Lyman, I've been a ham since 2008. That's about 6 years. Still haven't put a radio in my car. And we haven't put a radio in the new home. I lived in a gated community, and for a long time the antennas were up in the attic because we couldn't have them outdoors. So right now we don't have anything up, but eventually we'll get that. Let me pause here for a moment, and let me continue with Tango 4 Bravo 04. All right, my question reads, what is a way to enable quick access to a favorite frequency on your transceiver? Alpha reads, enable the CTCSS tones, which is false. Bravo reads, store the frequency in a memory channel, and this is actually the correct answer. Charlie disables the CTCSS tones, and Delta, use the scan mode to select the desired frequency. So actually it reads, what is a way to enable quick access to a favorite frequency on your transceiver? And the answer is Bravo, store the frequency in a memory channel. You know, I would say that this question, again, speaks for itself. If one takes time to program their memory channels, they will find this is a rapid means to get around the band. So with that, let's see if there's any comments or any questions from anyone listening this evening. Before I throw it over to Gordon. All right, hearing nothing. Cute comment, Bill, but we're actually in an area now that we can put as high as we want. So we're not in a homeowners association community any longer. So with that, Gordon, I'm going to throw it over to you. Tango 4 Bravo 08 is your question.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. Bill, besides all of that, we're now in a location that's got a canal behind us, fish and alligator and ducks and, you know, all of that. I'm going to use that as a radiation platform. So there you go. All right, guys and gals, I'm going to move you on to Tango 4 Bravo 08, T4BO8 on the question pool. That question reads, what is the advantage of having multiple receive bandwidth choices on a multi-mode transceiver? Good question. What is the advantage of having multi-mode receive bandwidth choices on a multi-mode transceiver? Now, the five or four answers that they give you is A, permits monitoring several modes at once. That is a false. B, permits noise or interference reduction by selecting a bandwidth matching the mode. And I underline the word mode. That is a correct answer. C, increases the number of frequencies that can be stored in memory. That's false. D, increases the amount of offset between receive and transmit frequencies, and that is a false. So let me say that this is a great tool to have. one simply picks the filter appropriate to the mode of operation. Now, this could be CW, single sideband, FM, etc., and this greatly reduces interference from other sources. Any questions or comments on this one, please call now. Okay, and I might add on that, you know, not all these transceivers come with all of these filters, so depending on your favorite mode, you may have to buy a filter to insert into your transceiver to do the job that you want to do, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles. Kathy, where are we now? Bravo 11, I think, is yours. Over.
Yes, Bravo 11 is my last question for this evening, by the way. It's Tango 4 Bravo 11, and it reads, which of the following describes the common meaning of the term repeater offset? Alpha reads, the distance between the repeater's transmit and receive antennas, and that's not correct. Bravo, the time delay before the repeater timer resets, and that's wrong. Charlie, the difference between the repeater's transmit and receive frequencies, and this, ladies and gentlemen, is the correct answer. So Charlie is the correct answer. Delta, matching the antenna impedance to the feed line impedance is also false. You know, repeaters work by using two different frequencies. One is called the input frequency, which is needed by the user to get into the machine. Using the input frequency for your transmission allows the input repeater receiver to channel its audio to the transmitter and allows your signal to be rebroadcast on the repeater output frequency. And this greatly enhances your signal and allows it to be heard at longer distances. The repeater is normally located at a higher than normal elevation and supports wider coverage than can be obtained by either a handheld or a mobile radio. The input and the output frequency of a repeater are normally spaced far enough apart so the two frequencies involved do not interfere with each other. And that is my final question for this evening, ladies and gentlemen. But are there any comments, any questions before I turn it over to Gordon for his last question? All right, Gordon, hearing nothing, your last question for this evening and for our third class is Tangle 4 Bravo 12. And by the way, it's been good riding along with you again this year. Thank you, everyone, for being there as well for this third class. So, Gordon, you can end it this evening.
Thanks, Kathy. Well, you're a great partner. And that last question is very good. You know, this frequency spacing between input and transmit frequencies of a repeater have some other attributes that you will learn about as you get into the hobby. There's some special filters that are used to sharpen the band pass of both of these frequencies so that they don't annoy each other and get into areas called descents and that kind of thing, but that's a subject for another time. All right, last question this evening, Tango 4 Bravo 12, T4B12. What is the function of an automatic gain control, or AGC? They pose the following answers. A, to keep received audio relatively constant, and ladies and gentlemen, that is the correct answer. B, to protect an antenna from lightning, absolutely no. C, to eliminate RF on the station cabling, answer absolutely no. And D is really cute, an asymmetric Cohen meter control used for antenna matching. Blue sky and no. So, as stated, the AGC circuitry within a radio keeps a relatively constant level of the signal. Now, this helps when band conditions and propagations change, produce either a stronger or weaker signal. and really helps the reception of the overall system. Any questions on that, please? KY6V for South Cars. All quiet on the Western Front. All right, Mr. Michigan, I'm going to shoot it in your direction. Let you parley things at your discretion. Just give me about 30 seconds to close about five recorders that are running tonight. When you're ready, Mike, KY6V, over.
Yes, this year I'm running one also behind you. Now, you see, folks, last week you had a fine pair of instructors, and look at again this week, another fine pair of instructors. This is really good, isn't it? The nicest part of this, folks, is that you can ask questions and there's nobody going to snicker or sneer or any of that stuff. We're going to give you the answers best we can because we're here to help. That's what it's all about. Okay, what Gordon was suggesting is we all stay quiet for a few seconds and he can disconnect his five recordings. So please go silent now.